From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number you'll call, 1-800-462-7413. Along with our call, Zorba, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, violent video games, and do they really affect our children in a way that we don't want them to be affected?
That's been going on back and forth for a long time.
Interesting data, interesting research. One more discussion topic ahead on this. And then we're going to talk about e-cigarettes poisoning young children and what I think is a toxic danger. And the e-cigarette people will not like me when they hear my story.
We talked about that just a little bit ago, but new information.
New information on there.
And our recipe.
Feta and cauliflower omelet. It's great. And what's great about it is we will talk about how to separate the yolk from the white.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. 800-462-7413. Toll free to the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Orlando, Florida. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling. How can we help?
Well, I've got a compliment and a confession along with my question here. Mm-hmm. First, the compliment. My husband and I thoroughly enjoy your lifestyle.
Thank you.
Most importantly, your laughter.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And as a pastor, I will take your confession.
you've been waiting for a long time to use that.
I've been waiting for decades to be able to finally use that.
Well, I'll take advantage of that then because maybe I have two confessions. Here's the first one.
Okay.
I actually used your show as an incentive to get my husband into the kitchen to help me with some food prep.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, way to go.
Yeah.
Good idea.
That's right.
You make our time in the kitchen cleaning food and cutting veggies more enjoyable.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And now the second confession. This question actually came up while I was in the shower scrubbing my arm and my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
While I was on a cycling trip a couple years ago in Vietnam, I actually fell off my bike and got some bad road rash on my right arm and shoulder. And as I was scrubbing my arm, still looking at the scars, it got me thinking, all of this dialogue about stem cell research and how promising cellular regeneration and turnover is, why is it that we still have scars, even some that I've had for well over 30 years.
So, in other words, you've got scars on your skin, and with all everything that's going on, why don't we just have skin that doesn't scar?
Exactly, yeah.
Skin that doesn't scar. Well, first of all, let's look at it from a biological point of view. A scar is to make sure that the skin is intact, that infection doesn't come in, that doesn't smolder underneath so you don't have an abscess. I mean, that's the goal of a scar. Now, what we are concerned about with the scar, and you want the scar to be firm and healthy make sure the door is shut for anything that's going to happen to your body. But from our point of view, we want the scar to be beautiful and handsome and pretty.
Or
and
not there at all.
To
go away.
Not there at all. So from an evolutionary point of view, because basically Vogue magazine was not part of our evolutionary past, although it certainly is part of the cultural past and cultural present of some people, we think of the scar as being something that's negative. But in fact, a scar, if it's firm, is exactly what Mother Nature is supposed to do. Now, some people scar more than others. Quote, they may actually produce exactly the same stop to what's going on in the body to make sure infection doesn't come in. But for some people, it looks different. People can develop something called keloids, which is an overscarring and is actually a weak scar, and that's something totally different. But so the answer is cocoa butter aside, the fact and vitamin E aside, some people scar more than others. And yes, we haven't figured that out yet. Let me tell you one thing. If I developed a cream that would keep the scar, and Tom is smiling right now.
You wouldn't have to do this program.
I would not be on public radio. I would be up in a castle in the sky somewhere. That's what I would be. I'd make so much money.
The accident aside, did you have a wonderful biking in Vietnam?
Oh, fantastic. It was absolutely lovely. And I people ask me what souvenirs I brought back, and I show them my scarf. It was a wonderful trip. Thank you so much for your help.
Thanks for your call.
We really appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And now Zorba, a Sun Prairie, Wisconsin caller joins us. Hi.
Hi, can you stand another compliment?
Oh. Of course. Of course.
No, one a show is all we allow. No, please go ahead.
I just want to thank you for your valuable public service. You're developing a lot of meritorious karma.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. We both really do appreciate that. You're most kind. Thank you.
I'm a 71-year-old male, and I've addressed some health problems through the years pretty successfully. One that keeps plaguing me is BPH, benign prostatic hyperplasia. And I have the problem in that I get up several times a night, and at times it actually aches. Of course, today it's fine. It's like the guy that, you know, goes to his mechanic with a car problem.
Oh, of course, of course. All you have to do is talk to me and the prostate symptoms will go away. That's how it is.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I believe in a kind of a progressive approach to problems. So back in 95, I actually diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I treated it successfully, naturally. So I like to start off with a natural approach and then ratchet up from there. I have been unsuccessful at using certain herbs and things like saponaminnow and sting nettle, and I've actually resorted to Tamsulosin, Flomax, to help me. I take about one pill a day. But I was just wondering whether you had any handy household hints on how I may treat this naturally. I don't want to resort to any surgical intervention.
The herbs don't really seem to do much. There's some people who say, well, I take saw palmetto and they feel better. And my guess is they actually do feel better when it's at the beginning stages. And then as it gets to really the stages that are where the prostate enlarges a little bit more, it's bothersome. The prostate is a walnut-sized gland, which is in the bladder in such a way that it can cause an obstruction to the outflow of the bladder. And you can measure how much urine is left in the bladder. A urologist can do this by using an ultrasound, and they can measure how fast the flow is by basing how a guy, you know, pees into a cup, essentially, and it measures it. And there's no right or wrong about when you have surgery. Surgery is very effective for it, but it's surgery. You know, and, you know, who wants to have surgery done when you don't need it? So we have medicines like Flomax. Flomax stops there are receptors within the bladder, and Flomax kind of relaxes these receptors that are around the bladder and the prostate. So often you can pee a little bit more, and the flow is a little bit faster, and you empty out more, and so you don't have as many symptoms. And basically that's the drug that you're on. And if it bothers you more, basically, you know, what it comes down to is surgery. And surgery is highly effective, and there are different kinds of surgeries that you can have for it. But I don't have any natural cure for this. You've been dealing with this for a long time, I take it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's getting worse or just kind of stable for you?
It comes and goes. It's strange. Mm-hmm. And I do think I'm a great believer in the mind-body connection. Yeah. So I think that stress is a factor.
Absolutely. Stress will do it. Caffeine does it, by the way. If you drink a lot of caffeine, that'll do it.
A pot a day.
Yeah, half a pot
half
a day.
Half a pot a day.
It depends on how big. A pot a day. Yeah.
A pot a day. So if you remove coffee, which, of course, you might be sleeping all day, but if you remove coffee from your diet, you may find that coffee is an issue. Caffeine tends to be one of the things that I find stimulates that. Go to decaf, see what that does. That would be a natural way because coffee might be part of it. And then, of course, reducing your fluid intake after 5 o'clock in the evening can make a difference too. But those are my suggestions, and I always tell guys, if you can live with it, don't have the surgery, and if you can't live with it, have the surgery.
Well, that's good advice. I think I'll take you up on the caffeine. That's my drug of choice, so I think I'm there.
It's my drug of choice too. I can relate to it. So
thanks very much.
Thanks for your
thanks.
Call.
We appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. Before our next caller, Zorba, some new info on violent video games.
Yeah, interesting article actually came out of Iowa State University, published in the British Medical Journal. But the study itself took place in Singapore, and they were looking at gaming habits of kids in Singapore. Kids in Singapore, like kids in America, all over the country, play video games. They looked at aggressive video games, how many hours of games they were playing. And then they also questioned them for and the parents for aggressive behavior, aggressive thoughts, aggressive fantasies, and they found that of 3,000 kids, that's a good number of kids, and three-quarters of them, of the ones who were playing video games, were boys, and a quarter were girls. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make a difference if they were a boy or a girl. The more video games they played, the more aggressive thoughts they had. Now, once again, these are 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds. There's no proof that they actually engaged in aggressive behavior, but they engaged in aggressive modeling thoughts and discussions with parents. And what's fascinating is they tried to get them to play video games, and they did play video games where they encouraged empathy. Okay, so now you've got a video game empathy. You get rewarded for doing good things. Didn't seem to make a difference.
Well, how are you going to get a kid to watch that?
Well, it's probably boring. empathy, video games are probably boring. I think you bring up a good point. You wouldn't really be engaged in an empathy video game. You'd be engaged.
Here, let me help you across the street.
Yeah, that's not really a video game that's going to sell much. But, you know, this has been a discussion on and off. My own thought after looking at this and looking at a number of articles on this is that I think it's a parenting issue, that you may play a video game, but I think parents and how parents are reacting makes a big difference. And I don't think the video games themselves really cause aggressive behavior, even though in this case they showed it caused aggressive thoughts. But I think I think parents, just like we limited our kids to television, we said you can watch certain TV. Right. We wanted to encourage them not to watch TV all the time. I think a parent that allows their children to do nothing but play video games hour after hour after hour is not a good parent, period. I think it's the modeling is how many video games are you going to allow your kids to watch?
Yeah. Now, I'm dating myself here, Zorba. I
yes,
know
you
listeners
are.
See me as a maybe 28, 30-year-old guy.
Totally. Everyone thinks Tom is 28.
I'm destroying that image right now.
Right. Okay.
When I was a kid, there was this whole hoopla about comic books.
Oh, really?
Were they destroying the minds of people?
Really? Comic
books? Yeah. There were the funny ones, and then there were the, you know, the hit them up, knock them down,
the aggressive
shoot
ones. Yeah, Prince Valiant.
And you know, looking at them, was that taking the kid away from what he
Superman.
Should be doing or she
really?
Studying? And
comic books?
Comic books.
Comic books were destroying our youth?
Well, you're too young to know about comic books.
My father was in the dime store business, okay? And what would happen was at the end of the month, all the comic books that didn't sell, they'd cut off the top and get credit for it. And I got all the comic books that didn't sell. And let me tell you, they weren't Superman. Yeah. They were the comic books that were like Harlequin romance. So I got the romance comic books. That's what I got in my house. Let me tell you something. They weren't aggressive comic books. They were the most boring comic books in the world.
I got busted once for sneaking a comic book out of the drugstore under my shirt.
Oh, God.
My only time, I swear, I've never ever stolen anything.
The only time you ever get anything against the law. You got busted. What happened?
The store owner said, if I ever catch you doing that again, he scared the...
Are you living the bejesus out of you?
Exactly. Yeah.
How old were you?
Oh, I don't know, 8 or something.
If I ever do that again, you're going to jail.
I wasn't 23. 800-462-7413. Let's set that aside. 800-462-7413. Ann Zorba, now a listener with us in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. I love your show. I know that you've talked about this before because I've listened to the show for quite some time. But I'm 27, and I'm having nightmares right after I fall asleep, or I wake up screaming. And it's been happening for almost a year, and no matter what I do before I go to bed, I can't make them stop.
Mm-hmm. So you're having night terrors. That's what they are. They're called night terrors, where you're stuck in these terrible nightmares, and like you said, you can't get out. You going to your doctor or anything like that?
I haven't brought it up to her yet, no.
Coffee? How much coffee do you drink?
Maybe a cup or two in the morning.
Caffeinated products at all during the day?
No.
No. So no soda that contains caffeine or anything
of
that nature? Alcohol? Much alcohol?
No.
No. Okay, no alcohol. pills. Are you on any medicines at all? Any kind of medication?
Yes. I take Prevacid for GERD and then Metformin for PCOS.
Okay, for polycystic ovary syndrome. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I don't have a PDR to look this up, but I don't think either of those drugs would be likely to cause it. There's some drugs that can cause it, especially seizure drugs that can cause this, but I don't think those drugs are in that class. Family history, mom or dad, did you talk to them?
Yeah, I told them and they just think it's kind of weird.
Okay, so they didn't have it. No family history. Migraine headaches? You have migraine headaches at all?
Every once in a while, but they're not as bad as they used to be.
Okay, yeah, migraine headaches actually get better with age. It's one of the things that gets better with age. Well, sleep apnea, we don't know. You don't know if you have sleep apnea if you stop breathing during your sleep. I have a couple thoughts. First of all, there's some things that can cause this. Sleep apnea is one of those things where you stop breathing during your sleep and you're sort of gasping, but it can turn into a nightmare of shortness of breath. Night terrors can occur on their own, and so some physicians will give medications such as Neurontin. Neurontin, gabapentin, is a drug that helps the sleep architecture. It's not a sleeping pill per se, but it will help some people sleep quite well and get rid of their night terrors. And night terrors can run, just like sleepwalking, they can run in periods where they bother you and then they disappear. Are you anxious about something, things that might be going on in your life, major changes that have occurred?
No, I mean, all the changes have been really good. I mean, in the last year I got married and I got a great job and so everything's been really positive.
Well, could it matter who you sleep with that would cause you this guy? I'm joking.
Yes, you're joking. That's right, Tom. This joke. I'm on the freaky page look as you're saying that. But that is an issue. How you're sleeping, whether or not the bed itself whether or not the bed itself is hot, if it's too warm. Looking at sleep hygiene, we'll put that on our website, zorbapastor.org, because sleep hygiene can play a role. We tend to have more night terrors when our sort of light reverie type sleep. So actually, Tom brings up a good point because now you're married. So that actually can be that. Mm-hmm. What I think, let me just sort of figure out the perspective of what I would do. Number one, I would look at sleep hygiene, go to our website. We'll put that on, look at your room, everything else. Number two, no caffeinated products after like noon. And you're not doing that. Number three, if that fails, I'd go to your doc and I'd say I'd like to try gabapentin and see if this helps. And if it helps, I'd take it probably for 3 to 6 months and then I'd stop it. That's what I would do to see whether or not that'll work. Sometimes you just have to get over these reveries. You've had some good changes in your life. They've been changes, but they've been good changes, so we've knocked that out. You're not going crazy. These things are common. I used to talk in my sleep. I was a sleepwalker many, many years ago. I'm not a sleepwalker now. And I periodically have night terrors, but they happen very infrequently. They only happen like 2 or 3 times a year. But they used to happen much more commonly with me. But you laughed when I said, you're not going crazy. Did you worry about that?
Well, I mean, I'm 27. I shouldn't be waking up screaming.
Right.
I've had no trauma in my past.
So it's not a traumatic. What did your husband say about it?
He says that we can't live like this. I scare the bejesus out of him and myself.
No, that's it. We also have to look up the two drugs you're on, as I said, metformin. Because you're on a metformin and then you're on the GERD drug. So we have to look those up. Your pharmacy, you can call your pharmacy to see if they're associated with night terrors. I'm not sure about those. I don't have the reference in front of me. But the gabapentin can be very successful. Talk to your doc. Try to get this under control because you're newly married and you don't want your marital bed to be one of a night terror.
Right.
We can't live like this. I can relate to that. Go to the sleep hygiene on our website. That'll help. And then look at your room. So, thanks for your call.
Yes.
Thanks for your call. You're welcome.
And before the break, Zorba, let's take a peek at the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This listener question comes to us from Sue in Norwalk, Wisconsin. She asks, "Dear Zorba, could you please explain the differences between aspirin, Aleve, Tylenol, and ibuprofen? I have pain issues, and I'm wondering which one I should be using."
Well, you can use all of them, But aspirin, we tend not to use for pain anymore. We used to use aspirin for pain all the time, but because
it has aspirin and call me in the morning.
Right, aspirin. I mean, now we say to Aleve or something like that.
Yeah.
But we used to use aspirin all the time. But aspirin upsets the stomach. You know, when I was a kid, they had aspirin, Bufferin. They still have Bufferin, Anacin, all these things to try to make the aspirin better. Basically, we have better drugs for pain. But aspirin, for some people, is the only things that will work for migraine headaches. That's what I use when I have a bad headache. Mm-hmm. Now, enter Tylenol. Tylenol is really good, doesn't upset the stomach. But for many people, it's not, quote, as strong, as pain-relieving as the anti-inflammatories. The two anti-inflammatories we have over-the-counter without a prescription are naproxen and ibuprofen.
Mm-hmm.
So they have more GI upset than Tylenol, but less GI upset than aspirin. And they are indeed quite strong. So if I have a muscle ache, I reach for ibuprofen or naproxen. That's what I reach for because I don't get an upset stomach from these. Mm-hmm. If I got an upset stomach, then I would reach for Tylenol. And aspirin I would put off to the side.
Okay.
I hope that makes sense. Anti-inflammatories first. Tylenol first if you get an upset stomach, and aspirin back in the closet. Don't take two of them and call me in the morning.
Do you have a question for the good doctor? Post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have our recipe coming up next. You'll want to stay with us for that. Lots more of your calls, of course, some interesting research to talk about, too, and our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, recipe time, this one, Zorba, feta and cauliflower omelet.
That's right. Do you like feta?
Not particularly.
I love feta. Yeah. I love. Do you like eggs?
Yeah, I do. I eat eggs.
How about cauliflower?
I like cauliflower.
You like cauliflower.
It's kind of a low-end vegetable.
Yeah, low-end vegetable, you mean on the veggie? It's not like,
the veggie
you don't
scale.
Say, oh, I think I'll have cauliflower
exactly,
tonight. It's not.
Exactly.
What is your favorite vegetable?
Oh, I don't have one.
You don't have a favorite.
No, I don't have a favorite.
Yeah, your favorite vegetable. You know what your favorite vegetable is? A burger. That's your favorite.
No, true. I do like veggies. Anyway, let's get to this recipe.
Okay. We start out with 5 large egg whites.
5 large egg whites.
Okay, so you're on. This is a listener who told us how to separate the white from the yolk.
Yeah, his name is Joe. He's in Franklin, Wisconsin.
Thank you, Joe.
He writes, "Hi, guys."
Okay.
There is a much simpler way to separate the egg white from the yolk, and it works every time.
Okay, now I've got it. Let me tell you what I have in front of me. I've got a bowl. I've got a little plastic Tupperware-type container, generic Tupperware, of course, and I have an egg, and I have a plastic bottle, and I have Carl, who is recording this for our website.
Okay.
Please go on.
Now, the pressure is on because Joe says this works every time.
Yeah, but I ain't Joe. I ain't Joe. Okay.
One.
Gently crack the
egg. Crack the egg into a bowl.
Okay, I'm going to crack that. Okay, here we go. Cracking the egg. The egg is now... The egg is cracked.
Two.
Okay, I got to put the shell over here. Okay, two.
Two.
Okay.
Gently squeeze the plastic bottle, forcing air out of it.
Okay. So the bottle I have is Nature's Touch.
Who cares? Squeeze
water.
The bottle.
Okay. All right. I got the bottle squeezed.
And place the neck of the bottle over the egg yolk.
Okay. I've got it over. I've never done this before. It's over the. This is like Jimmy Fallon or something. Okay. I've got it over the egg. Okay. Now what?
Release. The squeeze.
Oh my God, it's working.
Release and squeeze the yolk will be sucked into the plastic bottle.
It's sucked into the plastic bottle. Look at that. It's totally working. It's totally working,
folks.
Don't
sound surprised.
Don't sound surprised.
Place the bottle over a different empty bowl.
Okay, I've got a different empty bowl. And now
squeeze out the yolk.
Unbelievable. Look at that. Total success. And it's the first time I did it. Yes, Joe wins. What did Joe win?
He didn't win anything.
He didn't win anything. Anyway, it works 100% of the time because I've done it once.
That's
and it worked.
Right. That's right.
100% of the time.
So.
Okay, back to the recipe. 2.5 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2.5 big tea, extra virgin olive
oil. 3 cups of cauliflower florets, half inch wide florets.
Okay, 3 cups of cauliflower florets.
Sounds French, doesn't it? Florette?
Florets.
Probably florets, that's right.
Yeah,
florets.
Right.
Florets, that's right. A clove of garlic minced.
Clove of garlic minced.
1/2 cup of crumpled feta cheese.
1/2 cup of crumpled feta cheese.
And 1/4 cup of cilantro. If you hate cilantro, I like cilantro, then you could use parsley.
1/4 cup of cilantro.
Beat the eggs, the egg whites, with 1/4 teaspoon of salt. Heat oil in a heavy skillet, just a little bit, 2.5 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil. Saute the cauliflower until they're tender, about 5 to 10 minutes. Reduce the heat. Add the garlic, 1/4 teaspoon salt, 1/8 teaspoon of pepper. Saute for a minute. Pour the eggs over the cauliflower. Cook, lifting the edge of the uncooked egg underneath, shaking the skillet to loosen the omelet. It takes about 4 or 5 minutes to set. Slide it out into a large plate. Put the skillet over the omelet using pot holders. Firmly hold the skillet and plate together and invert it, right? So you can have a nice-looking cauliflower on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to cook it for about another 1 to 2 minutes. Slide it out. Sprinkle with feta and cilantro, and you've got a wonderful recipe. And not only that, but our listeners now know how to separate out a yolk from a white.
Yeah, that was pretty neat.
I am shocked. I never tried it before. It is totally neat. Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
And if I would like a copy of this recipe.
You know what? It's easy. Go to our Facebook page and you can enter into Zorba Pastor on Your Health, or go to zorbapastor.org. You can find our recipe, see fantastic pictures of Tom and me. You can see a video of this on zorbapastor.org. You will love it.
And we could put this on the website too, the directions.
Yeah, everything. It'll all be on the website, everything. We can put all of knowledge on our website and people. We could become the Google of public radio.
Isn't that neat? 800-462-7413. Toll free. 1-800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. How can we help?
I had a question about tongue ties and lip ties in infants and toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told that my now 6-month-old has a tongue tie.
Mm-hmm.
And while it didn't appear to affect our breastfeeding, I'm afraid that it might affect her speech later.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where to start. I don't know. I'm at a loss for where to start to make sure that she's not going to have trouble speaking later.
So who told you your child was tongue-tied? Let's start with the beginning. Who said that?
The lactation consultant at the Children's Hospital.
Uh-huh. Okay. So the lactation consultant, who is usually a nurse trained in that, said your child was tongue-tied and said your child might have trouble nursing. Is that what she said?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So did your child, your child is 6 months old. How much did your child weigh at birth?
At birth, she was 8'4".
8'4". And how much, what's her name, by the way?
Demars.
And how much does Demars weigh now?
A little over 16.
Okay, so the lactation consultant, first of all, was wrong. Let's start out with that. In other words, she doubled her weight in 6 months. Obviously, it didn't affect her ability to suckle at all, so she was wrong in terms of the fact that it'll do that. What'd your pediatrician say?
The one in the hospital said she has a tie, but it doesn't look significant.
Okay.
He would leave it alone for now.
Okay.
But that was when she was about a month old.
Sure. She was hospitalized, you mean?
Yeah, she was not gaining weight fast enough for them.
Okay.
And then there was a huge stomach bug going around Oklahoma, so they were worried.
And that's a very important issue, not gaining weight. So what you begin to immediately do is you change your threshold and you say, maybe this child isn't gaining weight because it's not suckling right. And so they looked then more specifically and they decided we're not going to cut because they cut that underneath the tongue. Okay, so the doctor there said maybe, but now we know it's 6 months old. Wasn't the case. Child doubled the weight, which is good. My gut feeling, first of all, is that your child is just fine. And I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't do anything at all. The lactation consultant was concerned and said maybe this would be a problem, but now we know at 6 months it wasn't. So I don't think they were wrong in thinking it was a problem, but in the end it turned out not to be a problem. And that's what I meant was wrong, not the observation. Yeah. The doctor in the hospital, when she wasn't gaining weight, said maybe this is a problem. If the pediatrician thought it was a significant problem, then they would have cut, they would have done a little teeny bit of surgery. It's not much. Cut off the what's called the frenulum in the bottom of the tongue. Stitch it and said that would be fine. They decided to wait, which was a good idea. Turned out not to be a problem. So on the whole, I would just ignore what the first lactation said, and I wouldn't pay attention to it at all. It is so unlikely your child is going to have trouble speaking at all. And if that's the case and your child isn't able to make the consonants, you know, when you touch your tongue to the roof of your mouth, at that time you'll deal with it. But if you were my patient or that were my child, I would do nothing.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Take care now.
Thanks. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is in Racine, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
I have a daughter. About, I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, she had a scope done, and they found that she had a hiatal hernia.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the doctor said she has it. There's nothing you can do about it except she can eat bland foods, and that's about it.
Wait a second. How old is your daughter?
Right now, she's 19.
And they said she has to eat bland foods?
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Because she was having problems. Every time she would eat certain foods, mm-hmm. she would get nauseous.
Oh, okay.
And mm-hmm. so we had a scope done so they uh-huh. could check to see if she had any ulcers or anything.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
She didn't have any ulcers, but uh-huh. On the way out with the scope, the doctor noticed that she had a hiatal hernia right where her esophagus attaches with her stomach. What I need to know is she has tried all sorts of over-the-counter and prescription medications for acid in the stomach because uh-huh. it burns. And nothing helps her at all.
Okay.
And now it's to the point where everything she eats, it doesn't matter what she's eating, everything she eats, about 5 bites into it, she's getting nauseous. She doesn't want to eat anymore.
Okay. So she's had a significant problem with this.
Right.
She's been on over-the-counter medications, things like Prilosec, you mean, those medicines?
Yep. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes. And Zantac, she's been on that medication, ranitidine.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she's gone to one gastroenterologist. And have you talked to them at all, or your family doctor?
She has talked to both,
mm-hmm.
and they basically give her the same information: try to take some Tums before you eat, or try to take one of these medications. But nothing mm-hmm. is helping. And I know that she tends to stress herself out about things.
Mm-hmm.
So I know stress has a little bit to do with it, but I can't imagine that it has 100% to
sure.
do with this.
Sure. Well,
and
she
I'm
has
concerned
something.
If I'm concerned if she's not eating enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, she's already thin. If mm-hmm. she's not eating enough, I'm concerned she's not getting the nutrients and
yeah.
stuff. That
How
she
thin
needs.
Is she? What's her height and weight?
She's about between 5'6" and 5'7",
mm-hmm.
and she's probably, I think she's around like 115, 120 pounds.
Uh-huh. Okay. And she doesn't have anorexia, right? Are
no.
you sure she doesn't
no.
have anorexia nervosa?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That I'm positive of. She's Italian. She loves to eat.
She's so, Italian and she loves.
Yes.
But she's not purging. She's not doing anything
no.
like that. Because one
no.
of the things you have to think about with young women is that they have, even if she's Italian and she loves food, that she could also have anorexia or nervosa. And what you may be dealing with is a psychological mm-hmm. problem. Hiatal hernias,
right.
on the whole, most of them are asymptomatic. We find them. Acid is a different issue. But one of the questions, as you said, is she stresses out is whether or not this is a stress-related dysfunction. And I mention that because there are surgeries that you can do for gastritis that is unremitting, that doesn't get better, for GERD, for hiatal hernias, where they actually take the diaphragm, go and sort of tighten it up, get rid of the hiatal hernia. But then you can have some side effects from that in terms of eating it. Sometimes the food, you can have side effects because it's surgery. But what I would do is I would get an evaluation as to whether or not this is a psychological issue. That's what I would do. And I would look towards somebody who is an expert in anorexia nervosa and bulimia to see whether or not this is primarily an eating disorder and the hiatal hernia is a red herring. That's what I would look at. I agree with you. She could have acid in her stomach. She could need to be on a proton pump inhibitor or what's called an H2 blocker, Zantac and Prilosec being the two things with that. But I would look psychologically to see if something else is. So she needs a psychologist evaluation for an eating disorder. That's where I would go to. I wouldn't do any surgery. I'd get that done first. I'd be concerned. She goes to college or she has a job?
Yes.
Or?
Mm-hmm. Yes, she actually both. She just transferred down to Texas. She's going to be going to college starting in June.
Uh-huh. Is she stressed out? You said she's stressed out. Does she have a roommate?
She just stresses out about things when they're not, you know, when things are not, that she doesn't know exactly what's going to happen, then she kind of gets stressed out about that. Mm-hmm. But I know that because of obviously how long she's lived with me, and I know that she's not one that stresses about her weight.
Mm-hmm.
I would
look at this, though, just because that's what you just want to make sure. In other words,
right.
You see that she's not, but on the other hand, you want a third party to look at it and say, well, let's look at this and evaluate it from that point of view.
Right.
Let us
right.
know what happens, please.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. We appreciate the call. Before the break, Zorba, let's hear from a helpful listener, Veronique in Brookendale, New York, a.k.a. the Juice Police. She writes, Dear Zorba, not long ago you made some comments about soft drinks and sodas, indicating that drinking a mixture of fruit juice and carbonated water would be a healthier alternative. I agree. However, an even better alternative would be to drink plain water if you're really that thirsty, or eat whole fruit, which on average contains 90% water. By eating more whole fruit, not only do you get plenty of water, but you also get lots of fiber. Whole fruits are delicious treats and taste so much fresher than store-bought fruit juice. In addition, they travel well, given their user-friendly skins. I love your show and really appreciate your friendly and rational bedside manner.
Well, that's very kind. Now, I must admit, when I'm thirsty, I don't want to grab an orange.
Yeah.
I want to grab a glass of water.
Yeah.
I happen to like water, and I don't like sweet drinks that much, so it usually doesn't satisfy my thirst. But I'm not a typical American that likes sweet drinks. So the concept behind half water, half fruit juice was to sort of satisfy that craving for sweetness that we have too much.
Yeah.
She's right. If you're thirsty, you ought to drink for water. And if you're hungry, reach for a piece of fruit because it has fiber.
You don't always carry a couple of oranges with you.
No, I must admit that. And, you know, oranges tend not to be in the vending machines when you're trying to pull something down. However, we have to look at large amounts of fruit juice are the same as junk food.
Yeah.
You know, there are as many calories per ounce in orange juice as there is per ounce of Coke.
Do you have a helpful tip for the good doctor? Post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
We have some interesting research to talk over. Coming up next, more of your calls, our medical myth buster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up at 800-462-7413. But first, Zorba, we talk again about e-cigarettes.
Yeah, e-cigarettes. So let me give you an example. I was in Washington, D.C. I'm in the Museum of American History, and somebody is walking down the hall smoking an e-cigarette.
Yeah.
And I looked at that person and I thought, they're smoking an e-cigarette because I can see the vapor. I can see what they're doing. And I thought, this is disgusting. Yeah. I don't want these things in public places.
We just
places.
Talked about that not that long ago. And we're a little maybe not.
Well, you know something? There are issues of whether or not e-cigarettes will help people quit smoking.
Yeah.
That's a very important issue, which we don't have answered. There's no good study on it. Right now, the studies are not well controlled. They haven't been big enough. But the issue is whether or not the e-cigarettes are safe. So the e-cigarette lobby says, yeah, we're safe. We're not tobacco. And I say inhaling something into your lungs may affect your lungs 20 years down the line. It took us a long time to find out it produced lung cancer and heart disease.
And we have some info backing that
up.
Well,
this issue has to do with the fact that e-cigarettes, the vapor that's in the e-cigarette that is getting vaporized, is expensive. And so people can now buy them in larger quantities and refill their e-cigarette vapors. Yeah. And lo and behold, now we have poisonings in children. In other words, because the vapor, because the liquid tends to be poison, it contains a nicotine, it contains flavorings, it contains coloring, it contains chemicals in it, and none of these are regulated by the FDA. And so there have now been a number of children who now drink this stuff and end up in poison control, and poison control doesn't even know what to do with it. You know, where is this insanity going to stop? Huh. Now, fascinating about this, we will get emails over the top from the e-cigarette lobby saying, you are completely wrong. Take back your control. You can smoke e-cigarettes. And I say, show me the money. Yeah. I don't believe that's the case.
These studies are having people dying.
Right.
Dying.
Yeah, dying from nicotine, from the poison. So, you know, the FDA tried to regulate it. And what happened is they lost in court because they tried to say this is a tobacco product. And the court said no. But the FDA is going back and trying to regulate it again. And my hope is that they'll get regulation for this. It is the Food and Drug Administration. This is a drug. Obviously, it's a drug. And the cigarette lobby, tobacco lobby is getting into it because they see a good thing.
But we want to underline that these can kill people.
Yes, but these can actually kill people because the poison can actually kill people. But let's look at people who smoke e-cigarettes and believe they're doing it with impunity. You're taking a chemical and you're putting it into your lungs, and you don't know what the chemical will do after 10 or 20 years. We know that the best thing for your lungs are good, clean, fresh, non-polluted air. E-cigarettes are pollution by any other name. Pollution, pollution, pollution.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a caller in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. What a privilege to talk to Dr. Zorba. Thank you. I have this problem digesting hamburger, ground beef. I always buy 80% lean, and then what happens is that, 6 to 10 hours later, boom, everything comes up.
How long has this gone on for?
This has started about 2-3 years ago.
Whoa.
How about beef? How about, you know, having a...
Nope, no problem.
So no problem with a sirloin steak, a T-bone, a ribeye. I'm making Tom's mouth water.
Oh, yeah.
After. Yeah, I know. Mine, too. I'm Tom, too.
Uh-huh. So does it have anything to do with how much you cook the meat itself? You know, is it just well done? Because when you cook meat, it doesn't
seem... Well, what I tried doing was I tried to... browning the hamburger till it's really brown and crackly.
Uh-huh, okay.
And that seemed to help for a while, and now it doesn't seem to help anymore.
Uh-huh.
I've also tried buying some turkey burgers I found in the freezer section.
Uh-huh.
Got sick on those.
So maybe it's the texture of what you're having if it's happening with turkey on that. Doesn't happen with it, like you said, with a piece of beef or chicken or anything else. So it's 10 hours later.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm not sure what's going on. Let me put that right up in front, especially since it's other forms of beef are not bothering you. It's really not a food intolerance, especially since it occurs with turkey and other things. So I would look towards treating the symptom. And if you want to have that, what I would do is consider two different things, either a ranitidine, which is generic Zantac, 150 milligrams. I would take that once or twice a day if you're going to have ground beef. Or I would try omeprazole, which is Prilosec, 20 milligrams on an empty stomach in the morning.
I already do have the omeprazole.
Yeah, and what I would do is I would add the Zantac to that. I would have it 150 to 300 milligrams. What I would do is I would have it when I had my ground beef. So I'd go out, have a burger, have a Zantac, see what happens. That's what I would do also. It happens only in the evening? Is that the case or any time?
I've had it at other times. As a matter of fact, my brother grilled some burgers for lunch. And I kind of forgot about it. It was a family gathering, and I said, oh, let's have the burger. But all day long, it was like, oh, my God, my stomach just...
Then Zantac, what I would do is I would try getting rid of more acid in your stomach with Zantac. 300 yeah. milligrams. One-time dose. See what happens and let us know.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for your call.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. And we have a listener myth this time from James in Marinette County regarding greasy foods and drinking. He writes, when I was in college on the weekends, my friends and I enjoyed going out to the bar and having a few drinks. Sometimes we'd have a few too many. Whenever this happened, we always seemed to have very intense cravings for fatty, greasy foods such as pizza, tacos, burgers, etc. Is there a medical reason why someone would receive these cravings after a night of heavy drinking?
Not at all. There is no medical reason. It's exactly the opposite. It's a cultural thing, a cultural thing. Give you the perfect example. Picture this. 2 years ago, I was in Tibet. I'm at 14,000 feet.
Yeah.
And there's a little bar. I mean, it's a bar. In other yeah. words, there's a little road and there's beer. And the people are sitting around drinking beer. And by the way, to keep the bar warm, they put plastic containers in the little furnace, which heats it up and has a terrible smell that I'm sure would kill you. And what do you think they're chewing? Nothing fatty because it's expensive, but they're chewing on stuff that is salt because salt is craving. And so they're eating basically potato chips, Tibetan yeah. potato chips, and that's it. That's because when you eat salty foods, you want to drink more. But as far as fatty foods, it's a cultural issue.
If you're craving for us to bust your myth, just send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we have a listener in Buffalo, New York with a question. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. I was wondering about a supplement called Kratom or Kratom. I was having a discussion with a friend of mine, and he had mentioned it to me. I've done a little research online, and it's from the coffee bean family. It grows in Indonesia. Its uses are touted for management of chronic pain, and also can help improve energy. I suffer from chronic pain. I've had multiple shoulder and knee surgeries. I've been under the care of a pain management physician for about 10 years, and mm-hmm. and I was just wondering if you've heard of it, if it's something that would be good to add to my regimen instead of having to increase the opiates that I currently take.
Well, first of all, I don't know if it's available in the U.S. I'm not sure. It's called Kratom. At least that's the name. And basically, it's an herb that Thailand has a big meth problem right now. Kind of interesting because Thailand, Burma, there's the Golden Triangle, and they produce all the heroin. And it's interesting when you look at drugs. So heroin is cheap in Thailand, so they're making
methadone. What's that got to do with this kratom thing?
Well, because they're looking at kratom as something that may help addicts of all different sorts. Addicts from meth addicts, heroin addicts, opium addicts, people who are addicted to OxyContin and hydrocodone. And they're looking at something to help people off. And right now, the feds are actually looking at it. It's a drug that definitely has some psychoactive potential, which means to the federal government whether or not it actually could be a drug of abuse. They're wondering about it right now. They haven't come up with that. And there are no good studies right now on its use. It's just sort of anecdotal research that the drug may help. So the first question is, number one, I always have a question about safety. But before there's safety, I don't know if you can actually get it. And even though it might say kratom on the label, that doesn't mean it actually has kratom inside because the feds don't regulate these things. Do you know somebody who's actually used it?
Yes, actually, the friend who told me about it, his cousin apparently had used it as a way to quit smoking, and had found that that it was something that gave him some extra energy, and as well had helped with a chronic pain that he had in his back.
Mm-hmm. Once again, we don't know exactly what things like this are, and we try things, and then we find out they have effects or side effects. So this would be in that gray zone of, I don't know what the downside is, but if you have chronic pain, if you're on chronic pain meds, if you're concerned about it and you want to try something, well, there's a downside of the fact that you still have pain and you're on pain meds. So if it were me, would I try something like that? Sure. The question is, which brand would I try, and does it have it in it? That's what it is. So I would go to two sites. I would go to Consumer Reports. And they have a site where they actually test this and see if they actually test it. You can often find Consumer Reports in the library, but they have a separate site for nutraceuticals, and you have to pay money to get into it because that's how they work. They don't work through commercials. My favorite site is consumerlabs.org, O-R-G. They do independent testing. I don't know if they've done independent testing, but Kratom. Well, but you can go to their site and find out.
Yeah.
In other words, you put Kratom into the site, and it'll tell you whether or not they've tested it, and if so, then you have to pay $5 or $10 to get into the site for the month or ongoing. Well worth it because you're supporting an organization that does independent testing. I like, if I'm going to take a supplement or recommend it, I want to take one where they've tested it and they've said this supplement is safe and it's actually in there. The label doesn't mean anything.
Great. Well, you know what? I think I'll give it a try and I'll report back.
Let us know. We would be interested. Very interested.
Great. Well, thank you for taking your time to speak with me.
Yeah.
Our pleasure.
Thank you so much for the call. And before we head out, Zorba, it's time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. A thoughtful listener, Julie from Washington State, writes, "Dear Zorba, first of all, I love the show and hate to miss it. On a recent show, you talked about pesticides and mentioned that 2,4-D was banned and no longer available. Well, that may be true where you live, but it is still sold here in the state of Washington, and it is not a pesticide, it's an herbicide. I'm happy to hear that you tried to discourage your neighbor from spraying. We desperately need all our pollinators, and the honeybees especially love the dandelions that are blooming when nothing much is available for them to eat. Thanks for all you do."
Appreciate it. They are right, and I stand corrected. And 2,4-D obviously is not in our state and is in the state of Washington. And once again, herbicides have to be used appropriately, and if we overuse them, we are going to help destroy the ecosystem.
Do you think the good doctor has been dandelion? Send your complaints to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or Facebook, Facebook, Facebook.
And, of course, you can call us anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0412Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.